All right, can I do my number two?
Please.
My number two is Tombstone.
Oh, sorry. Man.
Tombstone, yeah. So, you know, like we spoke about in text, RIP Val Kilmer, just super sad. Another phenomenal actor who, but to me, he will always be Doc Holliday. Not Batman or the guy in Heat or, sorry, I can't remember all their names. The guy in Real Genius is super cool. Or Iceman. But, yeah, Doc Holliday, his performance is Doc Holliday. You know, Kurt Russell, all those guys. And this is just quintessential Western to me. I think Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie that got so many raves, I've watched recently, and it just doesn't hold up. I think it's very woodenly acted, like a lot of his movies. I don't know. I don't understand the love for Unforgiven.
Agreed.
And it's crazy to me. Again, Tombstone not in the top 10 of the box office that year. If you know, if you ask me today, did Tombstone finish in the top 10? You know, in '93, I would have said absolutely yes. It's just crazy to me that it didn't. But yeah, just a phenomenal Western and just great movie overall. Well acted and fun and characters and lines you can quote. So yeah, Tombstone, awesome, awesome movie, and all those guys at the tops of their careers that were Doc Holliday and the other guys.
Oh, I mean, it's just a who's who. Sam Elliott as Brother Virgil. Yeah. Kurt Russell, my favorite from that movie, as Wyatt Earp. This is one you can watch again and again. You can watch it and give it a couple years and then go back and watch it, and you won't get to a point where you're like, all right, I've seen this already. I'm going to turn it off. That was great 10 years ago. But every time you watch it, it's just that movie. You want to watch the whole thing and push everything aside, maybe flip the lights off, close the blinds or whatever, and just get immersed in it. Just a stunning performance, I would say, by Val Kilmer, and almost tragic that he wasn't even nominated for an Academy Award for this movie or any others. Correct. He was nominated in Tombstone for MTV Movie and TV Awards for Tombstone.
Did he win? RIP to him. Great movie. Loved him in Maverick. I thought it was great that Tom Cruise gave him a proper send-off. Just a horrible to lose people that young of an age, man, and F cancer.
Yeah.
Just really sad and sucks. But anyways, I have a good idea of what your number two or number one would be. So what's your number two?
Number two, and give me just a second, because I've got like five here that are possible. And I'm going to...
Okay. Well, while you look, let me just read out some of the other films that came out in 1993 while you're looking, okay? So in the top 10, we already said Jurassic Park was one, Doubtfire 2, The Fugitive, Schindler's List, Indecent Proposal, Cliffhanger, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, The Firm, The Pelican Brief. Those were all in the top 10. And then you had Alive, which was a crazy movie but really good. When I watched it in the theater and had no idea what I was getting into. Hot Shots Part 2, which was great. Last Action Hero, a lot of people... point to that as the end of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the end of Stallone and Schwarzenegger and all those guys in those movies from the 80s and late 80s that kind of dominated. You know, that was the first big flop, whereas any of those movies those guys came out with just printed money and were guaranteed to be big hits. One of the strangest sequels of all time, Weekend at Bernie's 2. It's just like, how do you get a movie made where guys carry around the corpse of their dead boss for a second weekend. The first weekend. I think it had something to do with voodoo. And I mean, just the most insane, batshit crazy idea for a movie. And obviously the first one made more money than they were expecting. And I think the second one, you know, people finally were like, why would I want to go see this dead guy pretend to dance for a second time? One that I was super excited for just because I grew up with it, but totally bombed and was insane, was the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're a big video game guy, but when they you know, I remember seeing the first trailer for that, and I was like, what the heck is this? You know, I guess they didn't want to do a cartoon, and they didn't have CGI stuff like, you know, we have nowadays, the newer Super Mario Brothers movie, but it was just nuts. Like, Dennis Hopper's plays King Koopa, Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo are Mario and Luigi. It's just so bad. Let's see, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. It's the first time I ever saw Dave Chappelle. It's a hilarious one. True Romance, to me, is like the first Quentin Tarantino movie, even though he didn't direct it, he wrote it. So it's just a phenomenal movie. And one of those that opened my eyes, as we've said, like in early adolescence, definitely one of those that didn't fit neatly into any category. And it just was so cool and so stylish. And Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette are awesome. The Program, phenomenal football movie. About, you know, obviously a ripoff of FSU, but that was a great one that we kind of quoted quite a bit. Wayne's World 2, another sequel that nobody really asked for, but still really funny. And the ultimate one, the one that's probably had the longest lasting impact, not for me, but culturally and in pop culture, is The Night Before Christmas, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes.
It's just still to this day, as popular as it was back then, I feel like probably more popular, especially with Halloween becoming bigger. And I mean, you see now that people decorate their yards for Halloween, 90% of them, it seems like, is Nightmare Before Christmas stuff. So it's one of those that didn't get the love at the time, but has held up. And I mean, you can see just from all those I just read off, it's a heck of a year for movies, man.
Jim, I'm going to announce a couple runners up that after I announce number two, they're obviously not going to be number one. Already threw out Mr. Nanny. RoboCop 3, just not gonna crack the top five, and let's be honest, not gonna crack the top 20.
It's a terrible movie.
Sister Act 2. It's another one I could go back and watch it if Natalie, you know, we wrap up the episode, she says, "Hey, let's watch Sister Act 2. I got a babysitter. I'm all in." Mm-hmm. But not top five.
Okay. I think you're full of crap, but I love that.
Rudy. I've always appreciated Rudy, but for me, it just doesn't really get the blood flowing like it is supposed to for me, but it's a great movie.
It is.
Dazed and Confused is a very tough one for me to leave off the list, but I'm not finding room for it now. Maybe I could have scratched Rookie of the Year, but maybe I couldn't because it's the Cubs. It belongs there.
Mm-hmm.
Carlito's Way.
Mm.
And what
Grumpy
else?
Grumpy Old Men. Classic too.
I'm gonna throw one more out here and then announce my number two. Alive. I really, really want to put Alive on this list, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And I could I could go back and watch it again, but it's one of those where you get a little like faux nauseous.
Yeah,
do I want to watch this? I've seen it. I've watched the development of this movie, and I don't know if I want to do that to myself again. But
yeah,
I think it's a remarkable film. So it coming is. In. For me, at number two, is your number five, Groundhog Day.
No, I love it.
And part of this is
good choice.
I think anything that Bill Murray's in is he's one of those actors that once he's gone, and really this is kind of his heyday, the 90s. Oh, some people would say the 80s. You just don't get too many Bill Murray's in a generation or two or three.
No.
And I wonder who else was considered for this role, but he's just absolutely perfect for it. Andy McDowell, Chris Elliott, everything.
Ned Ryerson? Needle Nose Ned?
Because of the charm of this movie, I remember watching 50 First Dates, Adam Sandler and
Barrymore. Barrymore's in both of those.
Drew Barrymore.
She's in The Wedding Singer and 50 First Dates.
I think 50 First Dates is it's a really fun movie to watch, but it all kind of started with Groundhog Day. And
it did. Those widely repeat the days, yeah, have become pretty common now. But yeah, it was a good one.
You know, widely considered to be definitely from this decade, one of the best, and possibly one of the greatest comedy films ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And you need Bill Murray to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie that I listened to Bill on a, whose podcast was this? It may have been Mark Maron. And he talks about a movie that he pretty much ad-libbed all the way through. It was Meatballs.
Oh, yeah. The OG.
He basically said, you know, nothing against the screenwriters. Yeah, it was written by kind of a team of writers, including a Dan Goldberg.
Really?
But he looked at it, and I guess when it was time to start shooting these scenes, you know, he just did what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Bill Murray's a class, just all-timer for sure. I think somebody said, or I read somewhere one time, that he doesn't have an agent. He just has an answering machine. So you could, if you somehow got the number, you could call the answer machine and leave your pitch for the movie that you wanted him to be in. And he either would call you back or delete the answering machine message. So he's just a character and, you know, one of the greatest comedy actors of all time. And agreed on Groundhog Day. I don't know who else could have done that. And so thankful they haven't tried to remake that yet either. That's mainly what my takeaway from looking back at all these is I'm so glad they haven't tried to reboot any of them yet. So, Dan, let's do number one. I imagine it's the same movie, if I had to guess, knowing you and knowing me.
Well, I left one off.
Time. Oh, no.
We might differ on this one. What's your number one?
Well, it's the greatest baseball movie of all time. It's infinitely quotable. It did not get any love in 1993. I think it made $12 million. Like we said, Jurassic Park made $914 million. just, again, infinitely quotable, one of my favorites.
It's
total slice of life. Like I said, with Dazed and Confused, even though this one takes place in the 60s, I felt every second of it and lived every one of these days that these kids had, and that is the Sandlot. That's right. The best movie, baseball movie, I think, ever made. And maybe one of the, as a boy or man, one of the best representations of boyhood that I can remember on film. It just does not get nearly the credit it should. And infinitely entertaining and quotable and just, oh, such a great movie.
One
of my favorites. Yeah, you're killing me, Smalls. Forever. Forever. Not only one of the best movie of 93, but probably one of my top five or six movies of all time. I just love The Sandlot. Yeah, that's not your number one. I'm going to be shocked, Dan. I thought that was what we were leading up to.
I have to put it at number one. I'm in total agreement with you. And I have to, for the record, put Tombstone at number six because I just cannot have it be assumed that that's so far down the list.
Yeah. You left it off of your top five.
You know, ask me next week and maybe Tombstone has now replaced Doubtfire, maybe, but man.
For the Pelican Brief, did you just pull that up? Did you just refer? I don't believe that's really it. I feel like you got stuck and you didn't do enough show research here, Danimal.
Maybe Pelican Brief. Maybe we put Tombstone in there.
There you go. I think it's like, go ahead and flip-flop those.
But yeah. The
Tombstone number three.
The Sandlot, you know, usually guys our age, we celebrate it. There's very few of us that would say, I don't know what you're talking about. I never saw it. But we all saw it. But how many of us are actively... It's hard. It is hard to individually try to create this environment for your kids, but just the idea of Sandlot baseball, free roaming, free playing in the summertime, everything is so
bicycles.
Damn frickin' structured now. It's like, let these kids have some moments where they just wander off without your supervision and your helicoptering for 4 to 5 hours on a summer day. I feel like that's gone, or depending on where you live or what your what little enclave your family is a part of, or But man, I don't know if you did home run derby, but we'd go take tennis balls or baseballs and home run derby. We'd wander around the neighborhood sometimes at night.
Absolutely. We did not have a sand lot that we would go play ball at. We didn't even play baseball that much, but for sure home run derby. But just riding bikes, having your best friends, running around the neighborhood, experimenting with tobacco that you shouldn't, like I remember the first time my buddy brought one of his mom's cigarettes down and we smoked it, and it was just, we thought we were so cool, but we're, basically wanting to barf. And it's just like them at the fair with the tobacco. I mean, it's just like everything, man. It's like, whoever wrote that doesn't get nearly enough credit, because it really encapsulates boyhood. And I'm sure females have similar instances, but just, crushing on the lifeguard, going to the community pool. I mean, playing with your friends, going out after dark, like you said. It's just such a great encapsulation of that time in our lives, even though we weren't in the 60s.
There's some value, and I hope that I can, because right now we've got a little gang of kids. It's not very large, and they're general in the neighborhood, and they're generally good boys. That come around and they play with Warren and Wyatt. So all of a sudden there'll be like five of them. And on our little street here, now 2 years ago, I didn't let them shoot out, but Vivian, you kind of got to watch her, but it won't be very long before I let them go play. And you guys know where you're going and where you're not supposed to go. But there's just a little, I don't know if it's all paranoia about where your kids are going. Are they going to get abducted? I don't know if that's a big part of it. I think we just feel like we have to build in all these activities for our kids and just keep them busy, keep them locked in, and they'll stay out of trouble that way. Well, let them get into some stuff. And kids, should have, like I said, it doesn't have to be 4 or 5 hours, but how about just an hour or an hour and a half? Mm-hmm. Where there's not an adult around, and they're in the neighborhood, and it's safe, all right? Depending on where you live, it's safe enough. Just let them go. Let them go explore. Yeah. And I think this generation, talking about the guy at the counter at the ice cream store or wherever, that's so lacking in any kind of expression or interest.
Mm-hmm. Social skills just lacking.
Maybe didn't get that. Yeah.
And hey, we might have been that way when we were 14 and 15, but I feel like I still would say, hi, what can I get for you? Yes, exactly. And we're always going to be better than the generation that comes after us and has been like that since cavemen, But man, I doubt it will happen, but I hope that that guy and his kids that age can soon see a movie that reminds them of how great it is to be young and have that freedom and have that fun and have that group of friends and buddies that, you just can't live without. And yeah, it's just such a great movie and such a good time. And yeah, I can't say much more about it besides what I already have.
I like the dog, with the ball rolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another example of, I think it's pretty healthy for kids to run into a scenario that's a little scary, maybe not life-threatening, but between the 4 or 5 or 6 of them, let's just say it's a group that's aged 7 to 9, and they got to figure it out amongst themselves. There's no adult around, and they're not like a mile away from their parents, but just stuff like that in the neighborhood. How are we going to tackle this? Yeah. How are we going to figure this out?
Oh, yeah.
The Sandlot won the Young Artist Award for Outstanding Youth Ensemble in a Motion Picture, was also nominated for Family Film Award for Best Iconic Family Film in 2024. Took a long time.
Wow. Well deserved, though. I mean, it's absolutely, if you're a parent with young kids and are struggling to find things to watch as a family, if you haven't seen that yet, pop it in or pull it up on whatever streaming service it's on and watch it. I don't make them like that anymore, for sure.
I actually wish, I'm coaching T-ball this year, but I wish that there was a Sandlot-type league where it's better visualized than maybe actualized but we just let the kids play, and you let them figure out the structure of it.
Yeah. Well, you can. You should be the leader of that, man. You already have a coach. You already tell him I'm taking Warren. You know, once the season's over, I'm going to take Warren up to this field at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Bring everybody in their gloves, you know. And if it's not an actual little league field that you can get on the books for or rent, just go to a dang open grassy field of the park, you know. They're not going to be hitting 300-foot bombs. So, yeah, just you facilitate that. It's unfortunate that that's probably what has to happen because kids don't want to socially do something like that on their own, but you can totally do that if you start it up.
Jim.
That sounded like quite a yes, yes, Danimal.
I'm looking at something here.
Uh-oh.
Oh, so I Googled, can you have a Sandlot type league?
Mm-hmm.
An AI. I have my thoughts on AI, but... sometimes it'll spit out stuff on Google that's like, it looks like it's all true, but then you see that they actually miss some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can absolutely have a Sandlot type league focusing on fun, community, and low stakes baseball rather than intense competition. These leagues are often characterized by unstructured play, pickup games, and a welcoming environment for all players of all skill levels.
Perfect.
I like most of that. I like the competition. Don't get me wrong. Maybe not intense. I see stuff that's not just unique to our community here, but sometimes it feels like the dads are competing with each other, the different coaches.
Sure.
Jim, you got time for a few Dan time, maybe rapid fire garbage time questions.
Yes, sir. Super rapid fire. I got to take my daughter to eat. So rapid me up.
All right. On your laptop, whether this is personal or work, are you a mouse guy or a finger pad guy? Whatever you call that thing.
Finger pad guy.
How?
How do I use my finger on a finger pad on the laptop?
No, how do you... I cannot stand not having a mouse.
Oh, you need to have a mouse. What if you're using it as an actual laptop? You're using it in your lap, like on the couch. You have a mouse?
Yeah, then I put my mouse on the nearest armrest. Or I put a book out or something.
Okay. Well, that's very different from what I do. I just put it in my lap and use the... Always got to have a pillow there. You don't want that radiation so close to your important parts. But, yeah, I don't use the mouse on... I use a mouse when it's sitting on a desk.
Jim.
Yes.
I know you're well past this, but when Ever was little, did she say dad or daddy to preface every question, which then forced you to say yes, yes, and then they ask the question, but they won't just say, why is the sky blue, or can I play with this, or can you get me some apple juice? It's always
dad
first. Did you go through that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes she would say dad, and I would say yes, and she would say, can I ask you a question? And I would say yes, which now is the cutest thing in the history of cute. I wish she still did that. But at the time, it could be frustrating sometimes. But, man, you got to relish those times while you have them because it's funny to think back on now. But, yeah, she's definitely done that.
Speaking of being a girl dad, what is it like now, April 2025? Does Ever like you to be involved? Does she want to go places with you? Does she want to tell you about what's happening? Or does she want you to just leave her the hell alone?
If I didn't pry things out of her, she probably would want me to leave her the hell alone. But sometimes she voluntarily gives up information about her day. But it is a lot of, you know, jaws of life to get any kind of answer out of there, you know. But who likes being asked about their day, you know? When Kelly says, how was your day? I don't go through a list of every single thing that happened, you know. I just say it was good or bad. So I can understand why everyone would get frustrated getting asked the same question every day, so... You got to ask more open-ended ones, you know? You know that as a podcast host.
Yes.
If you just give them a yes or no, it's going to be a yes or no. So, but yeah, it's kind of, it's, as she ages, it definitely gets tougher to get information out of her.
How would you rate your satisfaction level with Bruce Pearl post Final Four? And let me kind of paint some color. Or I remember the 2015 Cubs, for example, and we lost to the Mets in the NLCS. Mm-hmm. And I was, a couple hours later, I was all right, because it was so thrilling to see them get that far. And you saw the team. I know college basketball is different, but I thought, man, we're going to be right back here next year. But how do you feel? I don't want to say, like, how was the game? Obviously, it didn't work out well, but how do you like Bruce Pearl, Auburn basketball? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I'm thrilled with him and with the progression. I've always been a basketball fan. I know that's easy for people to say when their team's good, but I really have always enjoyed college basketball and Auburn basketball, even when they were in their darkest of days. So I think they should have built him a statue after he made the first Final Four. I mean, Auburn traditionally, historically, is the second to worst program in the history of the SEC, in front of maybe only Mississippi State. And, you know, to make two Final Fours now in the past 6 years is just, it's amazing. And he did it this year, and both years, with rosters that are made up of, and you as an Alabama football fan know, stars make a big difference. And this roster was just, there was no four-star players on this roster. It was all guys that were unranked and guys that had played in Division II and in AIA. It's just crazy what he was able to do with the guys that he got on the team. And so he's just a phenomenal coach. I think he's one of the best coaches in the history of basketball. So I would be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed when we lost last night. But for me, the champion in basketball is always going to be the champion. But just to make it to the Final Four is a big, big deal, almost as big as the championship, because it's a single elimination tournament, you know, and anything can happen on any day. So there's another super long answer here, short question, but I love me some Bruce Pearl. I hope he stays until he's 100 years old.
He's a great coach. I love, speaking of old guy, I love seeing Patino back in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Maybe people have different thoughts on him, but all right, we got to wrap up, Jim. I want to throw in a real garbage time question. I mean, folks, if you're driving and you got your kids in the car, just pause it. Wait till you drop them off, because I'm gonna reward the Dan Time listeners who actually make it 54 minutes into an episode, deep into part two. They listen to everything and they love it. And so I'm gonna let you guys have it here, Jim. What are your thoughts as we're starting to approach that Alabama swamp ass season in a few weeks? I mean, it's already, yesterday was like 80 with the heat index, 87 or something. How do you prepare yourself for just that, man? Before I leave the house, it's
double check.
Yeah.
Well, you first, you know, stock up on TP, make sure you got plenty of loofahs bought. You get your hardiest of hardy, body wash. And just be prepared for that one tiny drip of sweat that starts at the base of your neck and works, all the way down to the top of the crack and just slowly slides down there. And just double check. Don't think one or two or three, like a Tootsie Roll, one wipe is enough. Go back in there and make sure, and hey, if you got room in your console and your glove box for some baby wipes or some flushable wipes, put them in there. There's no way this is, you're going to keep us in the podcast, I hope, Dan. I hope you cut all this out.
Jim, do you
this
ever...
This episode of Dan Dime was brought to you by Dude Wipes.
Do you ever just, you're pulled up to that raceway, or in your case, maybe Hampton Inn, and you've got the wipes in the car, do you pull three or four and just tuck them into the pocket so no one knows what?
No, because they're wet. Then you'll have a big old wet spot. You keep a pack. They have to-go packs at grocery stores, so they're slim enough that they can fit in your back pocket. None's the wiser.
Because you're out there, you're calling on customers. They need the freshest version of gem mm-hmm. that they could possibly get. And they just, quite frankly, yeah. they deserve it. I mean, they're giving you their business. The least you can do is be dry and presentable.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, on that note.
And hygienic.
Absolutely. Well, all good things must come to an end. And so it goes here, probably the sixth or seventh episode with Jim. Number 93. Jim was episode number one.
Yeah.
So as you can see,
congrats on you. Yeah.
As long as Dan Time is living and breathing, Jim Powell will always be back on the show. And you said something a long time ago that it's just taken me a while to accept, but you said Dan Time, from your perspective, is time with Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm okay Absolutely. With that. At first I wasn't. Now I'm all right with it because there's going to be a shift here as we get past episode number 100. Yes, there will still be Dans that I talk to and Danielles and everything in between, but you're just going to start seeing some more different types of people that are really just like an extension of what I'm interested in or what I think you might, as a listener, be interested to hear. So,
mm-hmm.
and when Jim's Exciting. On, it's just two it. Friends.
That's right. Thank you, Dan, for having me.
That's it, folks. Remember, we've hit on the high points of the 1993 box office hits. There's plenty more that we didn't cover, but if you've heard about these movies or haven't seen them in 10 or 20 years, hopefully we've set up your next Friday night, date night at home.
Whistle. There you go.
You guys have a terrific, productive week. And Jim, I'll let you sing us out.
Pauses, man. I mean, if y'all had any idea, the pause, that he must spend hours editing these pauses. I didn't know if I lost you there or if you were pausing for music. All right, I got to go. Bye, animal.
Jim, will you sing us out? Will you sing us out with anything you remember from...
How about this little ditty from Jurassic Park when Sam Neill, the Timmy, has been electrocuted by the electric fence and Sam Neill is trying to perform CPR on him to bring him back to life. He goes, Tim, oh, Tim. That's the animal Dan Time. Thank y'all, everybody. Bye-bye.
And remember, follow Dan Time on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, at Dan Time Pod, and email the show at DanTimePod@gmail.com. Before you know it, we'll be through the 90s episode number. So if you got a year coming up, let's say 97, 98, 99, that you'd like to talk about, send me a line so we can get nostalgic about music, movies, or something else that's important to you. Thanks for listening. Tell a friend about the show and have a great week.